May we begin and start the business of the day. Why special greetings to vulnerable women? Okay, great. Honorable members, with your permission, I think the agenda is before you, but with your permission, we want to propose that we start with the adoption of the reports, because Honorable Smith has a task to deal with another report and is expected in another meeting. Is that fine? Thank you very much. Honorable Smith.
I'm not sure how you want to handle this. I thought we were going place for pay. You want me to zoom into the ones that I think might need discussion at committee level? I could do that. And there are only two of them.
Maybe let's do page by page. Yeah. And then we start with correctional services, and we do it page by page. Honorable Tom?
Yes, Chair. I just want to say that I think it's only unsatisfactorily that we received these reports in a soft copy only late yesterday. And then it expected of us to come here today fully prepared. I think it makes a bit of a mockery of all of the processes we've gone through during the budget preparation cycle to only expect of us to come here with an evening's notice of what the draft report will read.
Hon, what you are saying is very reasonable, but I'm sure you will agree with us that we have two departments in one, and we have many entities, and you know, the reports were only finalized yesterday. We received them yesterday, so we have no other choice. So we don't want to apologize for that.
Chair, thank you very much. I think it may not have to be necessarily place mesh, because it's a report of what we're dealing with as a committee. So the issues that are in the report, the issues that we're debating, engaging departments on, getting them in 2 hours maybe satisfies, nevertheless, is busy other things.
Let's not make it a debate. Let us note the concern. But we have explained that we have two departments in one, and we have many entities. So the secretariat is overstretched as well. They can complete the work as soon as we would desire. But let's proceed with the correctional services report. We take page by page. Page one. Any issues to be raised? I should also say that this is a report produced by the Secretariat. It doesn't belong to any political party. So it's a neutral document based on our deliberations.
You want to decide, Mr. Chair?
Pardon?
You want to decide for me? You called me?
No, that's why I'm calling attention, and you said what on time.
Yes. If I want to confer with my colleague, I'm bound to do it.
No, it's allowed.
Good.
Honorable Smith.
No, I'm saying I'm comfortable with page 4. So you're going page by page, so I'm saying I'm comfortable with that page.
Sorry, to page 4. I'm very pleased to see on 5.2 that the correctional services budget has increased to 20,000 billion. I think we've got that full stop and come on to the 5.2. And again, under 19.721, otherwise it's 19,000 billion.
Sorry, Chair, the figures is not my strong point, but 5.1 right at the top end seems to have the same problem.
5.1, the full stop must come off with 7. 1.7.
Can we just revise our. Yes. I'm also not sure how much we'd like to try. Page 5.
Can I just refer to on page 9, H11, around committee observations? So I want to humbly suggest that 811 around under committee observations. May I continue? Let me continue. The first line, Chair, I am suggesting that we replace the word, or let me do the sentence that I think it should read, by basically replacing one word and adding two more. I'm suggesting, Chair, that we replace that to read, the committee again questions the accuracy of some of the information. As it stands, it's almost talking about the accuracy of the entire report. But the accuracy, and so I'm changing reliability to accuracy of some of the information contained in the report. And then, for that sentence to end, in other words, for the last sentence, the sentence that starts with that information taken before, be scrapped, Chair. So some of the information, and we end with the concerns, have been there for the past couple of years. But that sentence that says that information tabled before the committee of parliament was unreliable, raises serious concerns. I think what we are saying in essence is that Zeb's leading parliament, and I don't think that's what it is. Yes. So I think we should take out the last sentence. Yeah, the one that starts with next, then we just remove that one totally.
But I thought that the structure of the report is such that if anything is inaccurate or unreliable, we can refer to a specific paragraph and say paragraph 6.3, this is not accurate. But to make a general statement that we question the inaccuracy of the report means that every paragraph is inaccurate, and therefore there is no report. Can we deal with that? Because it can't be the report that is inaccurate. It must be a specific paragraph, and which is that paragraph. And if we can't point to a specific paragraph, then we don't need that type of a statement. Can you address us on that?
No, Chair. I don't need to answer this, because it does exactly what you're saying. Because it says information around the targets were unrealistic. And that's correct. There were some targets that were unmeasurable. So it's not in the entire report. It's talking about performance targets. And that's why I was saying some of the information, it's not all the information. So I think it's captured correctly here, Chair. And it's not general of the entire report. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think I support Honourable Smith's sentiment. Today, we should rather say in accuracy rather than reliable.
Any other views? Please tell me.
I'm just not sure what Mr. Smith's recommendation was about the next report, and how you say that the other person might be scrapped or not.
No, I'm saying everything remains as it is, up to the word what Parliament.
Two, yes.
And then everything beyond that must be scrapped, having added accuracy as opposed to reliability and some of the information, and so that it captures the chairperson's concerns. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you.
On page 12, I'm happy to say I've got a print on page 30, not on page 12, but page 12 I'm happy to say.
Just 9.1, line 2, the budget does not speak to the rehabilitation. Maybe does not address. I'm not sure whether that is a correct usage of the word. The budget does not sufficiently address the rehabilitation in total. Maybe we can say that's wrong.
That's
I think you're right. Adequate address, rather than speak to you. It does speak to, but it is adequate.
I think we should make a very strong point of this, Chair, because it is part of the outcome, and it's being barely addressed at all. So I think we should make quite a strong statement in this bill.
And you made that speech.
Well, I don't know, but stronger than we're saying now.
Anything?
Well, they have time to consider.
Okay, we agree that there might be emphasis on the program. We agree on that. Can we proceed to page 13?
I have just one on page 13, Chair. Recommendation 9.7 that talks about the existence of jigs. We had this discussion, Chair. And in my view, I don't think we concluded it sufficiently. So my proposal would be, Chair, that the first few sentences remain as they are, up to conditions of incarceration. I have no problem with that. Beyond that, the committee should be provided with the detail of how GICS intends to regulate. I really think what we should be saying there, Chair, is the committee urges that this matter be resolved ASAP, because I don't think we've quite resolved it at a committee level, the whole matter around independence and so on. So my suggestion is that from the word, the committee should be provided with, up to the end, should be substituted with one sentence that says, the committee urges that the matter be resolved as soon as possible. Whether you say the GICS matter, we spoke about GICS in front. All I'm saying is that I think we should have a discussion and debate, and I'm suggesting we put a one liner.
But also, from different entities, this idea of independence keeps on cropping up. But independence can also not be interpreted without reference to accountability. And this then becomes a matter of interpretation of the Constitution. We have divergent approaches from different entities. Shouldn't we maybe ask the lawyers in the department, the lawyers of Parliament, just to look at the Constitution and these two concepts and do an opinion for us before we come back to these issues? Because, you know, if we ourselves appear not to be certain as to what the Constitution means, it's a serious matter, because we can't be here to implement the Constitution and we're not sure what the Constitution means. Mr. Bassett, can we appeal to your good office, aside from this exercise, really to look at the Constitution, or Mr. Garnett here from the Parliament, put your eyes together and start helping us to understand the Constitution, because we have different views and it's not really good. Christine?
I know this is in the context of the chapter 9, but there's actually quite a nice discussion around independence in that report. I can also unearth that and have a look at that too.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, it's very nice.
I agree that we should have a workshop, but I don't think we should conflate these. First, we shouldn't have a dialogue, that's what I'm saying, to put that into the house. Just for people that are going to go and do work, this is not a constitutional structure, so we shouldn't be looking at this as we look at anything else. So I just promise put that point. But the issue that the Chair is raising about independence and accountability is still valid. That's what I'm suggesting, Chair. The committee urges that this matter be resolved ASAP, would cover everybody else's concerns, because we're not closing it and we're not being prescriptive as to what it should be currently.
Okay, thanks. Christine, are you happy? Can you
leave
a message?
No, I could be incorrect, but I just remember that when the minister was giving a political overview, he was speaking about the colloquium that he intends having towards the end of the year. I think he mentioned, maybe this is just background information, but he mentioned that GICS would be part of that discussion. So
I think let's separate those processes in the executive from our concerns. I think for now, we accept what Honorable Smith is saying, but I think as Parliament, we really need a workshop on independence and accountability, because we are charged with the responsibility to implement the Constitution. We need to have to be at one as to what the Constitution means.
Thank you, Chairperson. Some of the idea of having a workshop on independence and accountability, I just want to caution that when it comes to the Kala Asmal report, Parliament hasn't adopted the report yet.
No, that's a good question, but maybe that process will also help Parliament to make up his mind as to where they want to go with that. Okay.
Are we happy with the original text report as amended? Any proposal on this
document? I can.
Honorable Smith, proposal this Honorable Horn?
No.
Any other proposal? Honorable Bonga, second. Any counter proposal?
Yeah, Chair, the Democratic Alliance reserves our position. Now, I think it must just be clearly stated that we don't adopt with reservations. I saw in one debate yesterday, it led to a whole lot of debate in the debate. We reserve our position.
Thank you. I think that's a democratic right that all of us must respect. Okay? The report is adopted, and then the Democratic Alliance reserves their position. Thank you very much. Can we move on to the justice report? Honorable Smith, thank you very much, sir. And you are.
The chairman had time to engage us properly, none of us have.
I don't recall that being an accuracy. I can't remember what it was, but I don't believe it was that.
Bullet number?
It's not numbered. Countrywide, there's almost 100% access to small claims courts. I don't know if that's a correct, it's not my recollection of the report.
Okay.
what is your understanding of what was discussed? Because they were trying to actually put together what was the outcome of the discussion of the committee. If this is not true, we need to actually
We need to revisit that point. I'm not sure what it was, but my recollection is that it was somewhat unsatisfactory access to
this
men's court.
This is part of it's just a little overview, but I will go and check my notes, and then perhaps we can just
adjust it a bit. What do you think is more accurate? Okay. Are you okay with
it? The intention is to ensure instant access.
It says almost. It doesn't say 100%. And it talks about access. Almost 100% access to small claims courts, which provides a key point of access to justice. Look at the distribution of courts. Distribution is actually tell us to validity of this.
We are close.
Okay.
100%.
Yes.
Maybe
you have a look
at it.
Look at it, please.
But you see, the reason we have 2%, 60, and 100 is because we must be precise. If you say we are close, it's like guesswork. Next year we are going to say we are close, and then when are we finally close? I think let's try and use statistics so that there is certainty in our communication.
What is opinion?
It's a recording of what the minister said. So it just needs to accurately reflect what he said, whether it's correct or not. If he said it's almost 100%, then that's to be debated by us, but this is just reflecting what he said, and I think that's all you need to ascertain.
We have the responsibility to get the accurate statement from him.
Yeah.
Because if he generalizes and then we adopt the generalization, where are we taking Parliament?
No, but it's under 5, Minister's Political Overview.
Can we try and do this under committee observation? Because what we're discussing about now is committee observation, so we can actually correct it under the heading.
Okay. We want the second thing, whatever we do. Page 9,
just can't give the justice some thousands of billions. I see here it's only 9 billion. It's directly reflected.
So,
bullet 9.2. Mr. Nkosana is not an advocate, he's an attorney.
Thank you.
very concerned that Legal Aid has lost a lot of its money from 1.58 billion to 1.58, 1.57. So we just need to add a billion in there. I'm sure they'll be happier. In 10.7, there's a billion missing. Chris? Second sentence.
Check the
the top 14.1, there's been a lot of discussion about certain views on indigenous law as opposed to English common law, Roman Dutch law. And whilst I don't necessarily disagree, I think there needs to be a broader debate on these issues. And I'm not sure whether it is correct at this stage to say that that transformation, that the whole committee, you might say members of the committee, but I'm trying to find a way to put what the sentiment is here. Because whilst I appreciate the need to look into the issue, I don't believe that we necessarily, and our constitution doesn't mean that we should throw out common law or Roman Dutch law, and I don't think that's what your intention is at all. So I'm not sure how to phrase this in a way that takes us alongside or with you on the process, because you correctly then say that there is a work in this regard and that, but I think just to incorporate at the top, it might create the impression that I might have to, that we are all in agreement that Roman Dutch law and common law is no longer acceptable.
No. It can be. It can be, because what it guides us is that we are a society united in our diversity. And that diversity means that there are people who come from the Roman Dutch law background, others from the English law background. But all we are saying is that those who come from the indigenous law background are not catered for. So the three systems must have equal respect, provided all of them are consistent with the constitution. So there can't be any notion that you throw away Roman Dutch law or English common law. Page 27.
Yeah, thanks, John, for 14.5. I think from the last paragraph, I think we must put that as part of our recommendations. This is
anyone has any problem with that, because that's the matter that goes to the heart of access to justice. If you talk to the Peruans in Chinese and expect them to understand you, you'll be making a big mistake. So people must accept justice in their own language, especially those languages are official languages. So I think the proposal is that we make a recommendation on 4.5 that an indigenous language must be part of the curriculum. And actually, not just for law, you know, psychologists, social workers and all these things, indigenous laws must be, languages should be affected. Anyone has any problem with that recommendation? Okay, Honorable Ben Bach, support you, Honorable Bunga.
Thank you. people who are. I want to take what we, Kenya is living here, whether we are looking at the review of prosecutorial decisions or the conduct of prosecutors. Yeah, I think elaborate on that. Yeah, I think the last sentence indicates that there is no complaint mechanism to deal with the conduct of prosecutors. But then the top, it says we don't have a mechanism to review the prosecutorial decisions. So I want to check whether what we actually refer to by these prosecutorial decisions. Can you correct that?
We are talking about reviewing prosecutorial decisions. I think we must just delete that. Okay, please.
Can you just go up to... Can you go just up to governance arrangements and then full stop and then delete the, only the latter part? Just on that third paragraph.
Thanks, Honorable Maina and Majaki. Can we move to page 33? Honorable, sorry. Kirsten?
Okay, I'm taking back to 1411. And in the second paragraph, we talk about the slow progress of 1411, page 30, yeah. Yes. And can I just delays were because of the slowness of the consultative process and the complications, but I've noted that the one on education actually the regulations have been promulgated, so could I just put a sentence in around that? Okay. And then
you all understand you? Okay. Okay.
Between 1413 and 1415 on page 31 and 32, there's a repetition. So, can I just combine them? They both deal with state legal services. But I think when I was doing stuff, somehow the paragraph got split up and there's an actual repetition.
We actually do not want to see a situation where editorial work, which you should have done in your offices, is done in the committee. So please, in future, we shouldn't have this. Thank you for bringing that to the attention of the committee. Can we move to...
Because we're going to try and adopt the report. I know it's a bit nebulous, but for that purpose, let's leave it as is.
Please explain. Anyway, we are going to adopt this report subject to amendment. So you see there's space to do that. All we are saying is that in future, these things must be done in-house. Page 33.
Has already completed the recruitment principle both in the Papua High Court of California, unless there's also another court as well. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, as much as people purchase for.
Yes.
Page 33.
on page 33, paragraph 15.6. If I recall correctly, the statistics regarding prosecution for genocide in particular is disappointing. And I'm not sure if we should say we congratulate them. We may say we note their efforts, but I don't know if we can congratulate them. I think they've done terribly well at all.
No, I think you must be fair to Honorable Wittenbacher. If you disagree, speak up and say why. So that you are on
record. If I recall correctly, Mr. Chair, there was one prosecution for xenophobia. I hardly think that's worthy of any kind of congratulations. You might notice. But I certainly couldn't congratulate anybody for one prosecution.
Let's see others. Honorable Bonga?
Yeah.
I think it's like noting the progress in that regard. So we can all live with that. Okay, fine.
Page 30. We were already on page 35.
Yes, 35.
On page 35, under the community operational, legal collection policy, there is something that is important that we have to say. Looking at the progress that they are making in terms of representation, proper representation of women in indigenous cases.
Okay. Honorable Jackie, thank you. Can we forward to the
Africa is exploring different ways and so on and so forth. So here at 18.1, I think we need to amend it. I don't think the committee was really impressed about the report by the public protector. And I suggest that the committee was not impressed with the report of the public protector, as the report did not raise or address the concerns that were raised by the committee in the last meeting. The committee had with the public protector. That is at 18.1. And then at 18.3, the committee is unable to express an opinion on the issue of age.
I thought 18.1 is a real commitment.
It's a commitment to continued support for the integrity of that office, the importance of that office. It doesn't deal with performance. So maybe what you want to say is that you need another paragraph to say what you're saying. But that one, I think, shouldn't be a problem. But what you are saying maybe needs a paragraph on its own.
Yes, I can live with that, Chair, but I think that must be expressed that we're generally impressed as the report did not raise the issues that the committee raised the last time. We can take it at the second paragraph.
Second. Honorable Short,
we want to support that. It was not asked of any other institution. And when we discussed this issue, I again raised it with you. You'll recall that no other institution, NPA, no one was asked to report on the outstanding question. And in fact, when we raised this issue with Public Protector, she said she had written us in January this year all the answers to our outstanding queries. So there's no way that we will accept that. You're welcome to put it in, but we won't accept the report.
Okay. maybe let's first deal with this issue. I have not. Pardon? We have not yet decided on that. I just want to take a follow up on what Honorable proceed.
We certainly would not support such a suggestion, and in fact, we asked on that particular that can we get these replies that the Public Protector sent to us, and the committee was going to get that to us, and we've not yet heard anything. So could you have that information now, please? And again, it wasn't asked from anybody else. I agree with Honourable Frost, and it's a one-sided view to say that we were not impressed with the report of Public Protector. The Democratic Alliance was in fact perfectly satisfied with the report of Public Protector.
Yeah, about this report which was sent, where is that report? I haven't seen it. Because when we were talking about the report, we were talking about the comprehensive report on its caseload, including the number and types of cases being investigated and when these were received and finalized. Did we ever receive such a report?
Let me say that the only report that we received from the Public Protector was early last year on the budget. But the issues that you raised during the pre-circular process were never responded to. And dealing with the issue of the caseload, we didn't get the report, and we received a document on Monday, which I have sent to all members, but I don't know if members are ready just to look at this.
I also say that, confirm that I didn't get that report, the Secretariat didn't get a report, and we offered the Public Protector an opportunity to come and table a report, and she said she's not available because she's going overseas, but I learned that overseas was Namibia. And now the meeting was for one day, but she was away for 4 days. She could have stayed 1 or 2 days, come and address us, but to accommodate her, I wrote a letter to her and say, it's fine if you are not able to come, submit the report, and even now, we have not yet had that report. That's the situation. Honorable Bonga, I think you're still on...
Yes. She was saying we need to read it inside that sentence there, that the committee really was not happy with the committee, with the manner in which the report was presented, as it did not address the issue, the critical issues that the committee raised with the Public Protector in the last session met with her.
The point made by Honorable Schwartz and Breitenbach, that we did not require that of other entities. Why do we require it for?
No, that is in informed by the fact that in our last engagement with the Public Protector, we had raised very critical issues, and we had also committed ourselves together with the Public Protector that in 3 months' time she would give a comprehensive report on those issues. So the reason is the plan that she was presenting ought to have responded directly to those issues because they impact directly on how that office generally runs. The funding related issues.
I recognize you. You can let their hands rest and I'll come with you.
Honorable Reverend, can see Honorable Bonga and Honorable Swartz and Honorable Zendelbach. They have two different views. I want to hear others in the same matter. Honorable Horn is the best.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chairperson. The reality is that there is a perception out there that the Public Protector is being singled out and targeted, whether the perception is true or not. This, I'm sure, is now a matter of public knowledge and public interest. And to insist on this being done, when the Public Protector came here to brief us on her annual performance plan, strategic plan, without us having specifically requested that she or any other entity come and update us on what we consider outstanding issues is inconsistent. Secondly, this is the idea that she's been persecuted, again, whether unfounded or not, is supported by the fact that when it comes to asking or talking about her unqualified audit with findings, an audit that was found with the third-party funds and the SIU, she is the only institution that is required to now report to this committee quarterly. This is not mentioned with anyone else, and none of the others, the department itself, the NDA, Legal Aid, the Human Rights Commission, their audit opinions are not even reflected in the report. And this is, at the face of it, being used to what some in public and in the media would consider witch hunt against this institution. And therefore, I would strongly recommend that we do not include the proposal made because it would further reinforce the position out there already.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm actually worried about how we will get matters of this nature because what I hear is that it's as if we have like a uniform metrics-like approach of dealing with the entities. Every entity presents itself to us in accordance with its mandate. And we then, as the committee, engage that entity. And where the entity has presented information and we feel that there are gaps, we request that the entity should actually fill in the gaps. I don't remember us requesting the same type of information from any other entity, like to say to the Office of Public Protector, give us numbers and types of cases you are handling, and the turnaround for cases, and how you prioritize the cases. We've been asking from Fourth Parliament, and which probably would mean that maybe Honorable Frank has been here, you can actually address what I'm saying. Because from Fourth Parliament, we've been asking the same question. Maybe with the DA members, if you could look at your old records, you'd realize that the questions are not only us now. The questions are historic in nature. And what is a pity is that the public protector is that she's nothing wrong in this because she has said that she has submitted. I think what we need to find out is, where is this report that she's talking about that has never come to the committee? That's, for me, that's where the problem is. Why? She has actually submitted the report. She has responded to this that we are worried about. Let's start looking at whether she has responded indeed. We need to send the report to the committee. We wouldn't have asked about it when she presented. If only we knew it was in our possession. Something that needs to be clarified as whether it's here or it's not. And then we can engage on that report. And it will actually then dispel all of these other myths. And then, Honorable Rienes, you're actually saying that the NPA and South African Human Rights Commission audit reports are not available. I don't understand. Okay, please just clarify what you're actually saying because now because of the thing that we are...
No dialogue.
Because of the thing that we're talking about this institution and for some reason, I don't know whether it's close to your heart or not, and certain things are popping up that actually confusing the business of the committee. The NPA has got altered financial statements that has been interrogated by this committee. South African Human Rights Commission has got audited financial statements that have been interrogated. And when I'm saying interrogation, we will look at the weaknesses. We will comment about the weaknesses. And like, for example, with the South African Human Rights Commission in the past, we hammered them for having qualified audits. And we have actually then congratulated them subsequently when the audits improved. And that's how the committee engages on reports that are actually being brought before us as part of our oversight responsibility. It's not a matter of being in favor of a particular or less favor of a particular entity. It's a matter of us as a committee jointly exercising oversight responsibility.
Each report dealt with its own merits for the honorable one, as you respond, can you also report the issues raised by honorable one?
Thank you.
I'll give you a second advice.
Yeah, thank you, Jay. Well, I in fact agree with the Honourable Majaki in as far as she says that we as a committee should get to the bottom of the issue whether the public protector indeed responded on the questions right during the BRRR because she was emphatic in her standpoint that she did send on, and she even mentioned a specific date when she answered the questions that were raised during the BRRR process. So I think we, once this budget process finished, should definitely get to the bottom of this, whether that report has maybe been captured somewhere in a cloud, or whether it was never sent, or whether it was shelved in the administration, whatever. I don't even want to speculate, but the fact is for us to really evaluate whether she dealt with us in a trustworthy manner, we should get to the bottom of that. Now, all I think is unfair now, given the fact that she was not taken to task during the budget deliberations on her assertion that she on a specific date answered the questions, to now just put it on the table that, no, well, the report can't be fined, and find her guilty in her absence. It's not as simple as that. Well, now, I'm not finished quite yet, sir. Then secondly, in respect of the even-handed treatment of all institutions and all of the entities reporting to this committee, I think we maintain the view that, yes, Chair, and with all respect to you as well, I think the whole attitude of you from the day, along with the majority of the members of the committee, clearly indicated a bias against the current public protector. And if we want to reflect anything in the committee report to that effect, let it then reflect that the majority of the committee was not impressed, but let it then also reflect that the minority of the committee was of the view that the majority of the committee, including the chair, expressed a bias against the public protector. Thank you.
And Chair, just to, I mean, it's unfortunate that what I said was so twisted, because what I said is not that these are not available. I think it's common knowledge that audit opinions form part of annual reports, which we do receive. I've indicated of all the departments and entities in this report, three audit opinions were singled out by this, in this report. It is the third-party fund, which was unqualified, It was the NIU, which was unqualified, and is required to report to us about that. And then also the public protector, which was unqualified with findings. Yet, and none of the others are mentioned, which were, there were many of them that were also unqualified. Yet, when we ask the NIU to report to us, it is required to report to us. But the public protector, for some obscure reason, is required to provide us with quarterly reports on how she is achieving her, or addressing the findings. We do not require the third-party fund, which is a qualified audit opinion, to come and brief us or submit a report on how it is addressed quarterly. And similarly, we are not requiring that of the SIU. And again, it reinforces the perception of the idea that not all of them are being treated even-handedly.
Now, you see, before you ask,
you see, we shouldn't bring our party political positions in this debate, because the Office of the Public Protector is established by the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa. No single party has an option. We all have to respect all Chapter 9 institutions, including the Office of the Public Protector. But all Chapter 9 institutions, including the Public Protector, are independent and yet accountable to this committee. So when members of this committee could engage robustly with that office or any of Chapter 9 institution, it doesn't mean that people are persecuting the public protector or that people are biased against the public protector. I think we must look at matters in their own merits or demerits. Because the questions which arose in the case of the public protector were peculiar to that office, and members engaged robustly with respect to issues that only arose in that case. But otherwise, we can agree here that because our views are widely divergent on the matter, why don't we make this matter a matter of debate that we go to the house every time and say what they think about the report of the Public Protector. So we don't really have to fight about it. It's a question of different opinions, and all of us are entitled to those opinions. Honourable,
That's why, because then, but then we don't put in any paragraph now, we raise these issues in the debate. All I'm asking for is consistency, and I've now got the last October BRR report before me. And if I go to the Human Rights Commission, we asked them for a report on the information regulator. That was never given. We asked them for a report. The committee is unclear whether this agreement was signed. There's another agreement. Asked to be kept informed of the development. That was never done. So I'm just asking for consistency when it comes to it seems that we asked, and you're entitled to our chair, you're entitled to ask the Public Protector, but I think maybe your recommendation, otherwise we're going to be debating what we're going to debate next week. Yeah. And may I suggest that you leave the report as it is, and you raise issues about that in the debate next week, Chair.
No, Chair, I think we really must not be emotional about this matter of Public Protector, so I see. And we really need to, we're speaking about Public Protector, no? And then we start to raise other issues and so on. I don't think we meant the Public Protector. We're discussing the report that she gave us last time. We had similar meetings with other institutions. But what we raised, what was raised by the Public Protector, among others, was issues that raised the insolvency of the office, which was a serious concern to us. Issues of irregularities and so on. So what we said was, it was a simple matter. We thought that a plan that was, the strategic plan that she was presenting last time it was here, must be informed generally by what we have raised and our comments ought to have been taken seriously. Now, as she arrived here, what happened was that she could not read those issues and she said we wrote to him, she says he wrote, but she did not. So what's wrong with saying the committee was not impressed, but the issues that were raised last time were not raised?
Can we do the following? There is a view which says the Public Protector did not respond to certain things. And these things that are referred to are recorded. They are part of the report. And the Public Protector was offered an opportunity to appear before us, which he declined. And she was also offered an opportunity to respond in writing, which she has not done. And there's a view which says maybe her response went into the cloud, which may mean that the chairperson has put it in the dustbin or the committee has put it in the dustbin. But I want to say for record that I have not received the document she's referring to, and the people who manage the correspondence, the secretariat, also have not received that. But the Honourable Horn, we will pursue that, follow her office, and get a copy, because if she sent a document, she must have a copy in her office. We'll follow up that matter. But for now, I think let's accept the position of Honorable Swart, that this matter is a matter of debate. Then Honorable Bonga, Honorable Horn, this matter can be debated on in the House, but for our purposes, I think let's leave the matter here, because we also don't want to perpetuate the creature of the press, which is that there's a persecution against the Office of the Public Protector. We can't do that. It will be acting unconstitutional. But also, we can't shy away from our responsibility to interrogate all reports that are tabled before this committee from Chapter 9 institutions, because they are accountable to us. But we won't allow a situation where any Chapter 9 institution is persecuted. And also, we cannot allow this committee to be governed by deliberately created perceptions by the press who may be having their own agenda. So this committee respect all Chapter 9 institutions, and the Honorable Swart, we are committed to treat all of them equally as Chapter 9 institutions. So can we leave this matter and say that we move to page 37.
Paragraph 18.3, it is said that the committee is unable to express an opinion on the issue of additional funding.
I'm told that the latest correspondence that I addressed to her, she has responded yesterday. So she did respond. Her response has been forwarded to all members. Yeah, so, and then you can comment that inside debate as well. So we don't have to deal with that response yet. But it's good that she has responded, and we are here to know that. Honorable.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. While we're on the topic of correspondence, I recall that at the meeting with the public protector, there was a discussion between yourself and her that correspondence that you had received from her, in some regard. I forget what the context was now. Yeah, but no, it was something else. What are the answers to the visa block?
Let's not deal with the off-the-record discussion.
No, we'd love to see that correspondence. It was never circulated.
It's a letter, and the members entitled to a title of the letter. Can you circulate it? Yeah. So, Honorable Greitenbach, that's a legitimate question, and then you will be provided with information. Honorable Bongar?
Yes, it is said that we do not express, we are unable to express an opinion about the issue of additional funding. I think we did express an opinion to say that we have increased the budget to about 15 million, and yet the explanation on how that budget would have affected the office. But then also it said that we have increased the budget, and yet it was not explained in the meeting that how would that money be spent or assist this office going forward.
No, you see, honorable members, I think Honorable Bonga has raised a legitimate thing captured in that sentence. We just have to delete that sentence and not go into other issues. Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Honorable Bonga.
I think the whole paragraph needs rephrasing. In 2018, the public protector received an unqualified audit opinion. I don't know why this emphasis of saying, but we find this. Is it not audit opinion with findings? Yes, I'm trying to find audit opinion with findings. Then, yes. Oh, so you said 38.
Sorry for the meeting. We'll come back to that. We are happy with 18 the way it is. We can say the sentence, and then we can move on to 8.8.
I just want to say that for me. Kevin, I just have a comment on 7.
Okay.
I think to support your, to support 18.1 and to support the remarks you have made, where 18.1 reads and the duty to support, I think I would request that we add the integrity and independence and assist the office. So the integrity and independence of the office and assist.
I think I understand the angle from which you come. That is already captured by the Constitution itself. And no one here has the right to challenge what is in the Constitution. So we agree with you, but we just feel that we don't need to repeat the Constitution in the report. Thank you.
On this issue, 18.5.
Oh, thank you, Chair. I was saying that the whole paragraph needs to be ready. Especially when I said initially in 2013-14, the public protector received an unqualified audit opinion but with findings. It is not unqualified audit opinion with findings. And then it goes on the committee reiterated the remarks made to me 24 to see, that's what you've been saying. And then the first one, totally, needs to be rephrased. Where it ends with, on totally basis. I think it needs rephrasing, Vonan.
Yes. Yeah, thanks. The statement must say the public prosecutor received an unqualified audit opinion in 2013-14 with emphasis of matters. They identified the following. Effective steps were to be taken to prevent irregular expenditure. Procurement processes were not followed, and management should ensure prescribed processes are complied with, and disciplinary steps are taken when necessary. And then liabilities exceeded current access, calling into question the ability of the institution to continue as an going concern.
Do you want to point?
I'm quoting from the audit general.
But he's entitled to every point of order. That's why I'm not.
No, it's not a point of order. I want to say something that what Honorable Wang is saying is done. I'm just drawing your attention to the fact that I want to say something.
Oh, okay. No, that's fine. Interruptions are allowed. Proceed, Honorable Bunga.
Yes, yes. I think the two issues I wanted us to just quote in the report. This, what I'm quoting is effectively direct from the AG's report. I'm not reinventing any wheel in terms of what is here. So I wanted to just capture it directly as it is.
If the Honourable Bongo wants us to quote from the Auditor General's report in regard to the public protector, then I suggest that we do it with regard to all the institutions.
Yeah.
So that we're consistent.
Auditor General has read the findings. When people read the report, they are not going to have the Auditor General's report attached to it. They will say which findings. So I think it's fair that we do it this way, but not only for the public protector. We have to be consistent, treat all. Honorable Majaki.
Chairperson, we'll do that whether it's emphasis of matter. Because not all audit opinions have got emphasis of matter. So now, I think it's in a manner which...
Honorable Majaji. Of course, where there are no findings stipulated, the need will not arise. Let's say we'll do it this way, where the need arises. Okay.
Thank you. With the greatest of respect to the Honorable Tunani Majaki, this is frivolous.
Anybody unhappy with any recommendation? They also appreciate.
Okay, sorry, on 19-6, I think we correctly
I
raised this earlier when with you, Chair, about the Human Rights Commission.
Can I ask a question from us?
No, it doesn't work.
Just now we'll say the public protector is an ACDP.
Oh, now you want to get into it. But then you want to take the name of supporting you
there. Again, this highlights the issue of, we note the Commission is unable to set any power frames for the transfer. Now that's the Human Rights Commission, and we might need to make that stronger because we asked them in our EBR report to give us a time frame, a written report, and that was not produced when they reported here. So I'm just raising consistency, that's all I'm raising. But I think it's okay as it stands at the moment, unless there's any other suggestion. But it just emphasizes the point of consistency, Chair, that's all I want to say. You know, there was and then we could have asked the Human Rights Commission, why didn't you respond to that? I asked the question about the pub. You remember I asked them about the information regulator. At that stage, I wasn't aware that in our BBR report, we'd asked for a written report on that.
Yeah, I see people have a tendency to say it was an oversight. But I think you are right. We need to insist that people can't just say we are unable to. We are elected in 5 years. We can't be given open-ended answers. We don't know whether it's going to come in 2020 or 2025. People have got to be precise.
I think, Chair, going forward, what we should do when we've done this report, we write letters to each institution about outstanding issues. And then again, when we've done our BER report, we write letters. And then when we've got a cut-off date, a week before the cut-off date, we say the cut-off date, like that was in January, why have we not received it? So then there's not uncertainty that people are warned that they haven't responded to what we require, Chair. Thank you.
Sir, thank you very much for that constructive suggestion. I guess everybody, including all those that you distance yourself from, I support. Speaks for itself. Okay, thank you. Page 40, no, that's the list. Christine?
Sorry, just for the report, picking up on the last suggestion about be precise around dates, there are a couple of reports being released in the report. Do you want to actually give people a deadline? We did that in the past, and actually was quite useful, and we just included a little table saying what needs to be done and by when. Yeah.
Would that would be helpful, a reasonable time.
Okay.
Look, yes, I think the suggestion is good, Christine. And also to look at what to do when there's no response. Because, you know, with some of these entities, you ask them to give you information for 2-3 years, and you get nothing.
I think let's give them the benefit of the doubt. As Parliament, we also have time frames. We give them deadlines, and then we give them reminders. So let's not think about punitive action before we are really disappointed. Any proposal for the adoption of the report?
No.
Honourable Majake proposes. Honourable Mutapo seconds. Any counter proposal? Honourable Kuzinbach addresses.
The Democratic Alliance obviously reserves its position.
We are not opposing because we are very democratic way of doing it.
It's a democratic alliance.
I think on a serious point of order, what will be the need that we seek as a committee? They participate and all and how much process and things and do all those things. And at the end of the process, they say we disagree. These are destructive ways of participating.
Honorable Bonga, it's not the first time that it happens. But also it gives you space. We'll give you more minutes to deal with that issue during the debate. But I think let's allow political parties. So the report is adopted, yes.
We'd be happy to. We absolutely second to.
But then you will make the staff regarding.
I don't want the city of Parliament to be boring because we have exhausted the debate here. Let's suspend all these things. The report, the both reports are adopted. But you will remember that we made an application to the Constitutional Court. Oh, okay. OCJ. Yes, we'll come back to it. Yeah, let's deal with the Office of the Chief Justice. You all have the document. It is 11 pages long. We'll take page by page. Page 1. Very straightforward. Page 2. Page 3.
page 12. Page 5. Is there anyone from the Office of the Chief Justice here? Page 5. Page 6. Page 7. Page
8.
Page 5.2.
I'm listening. Fine. 5.2. You did refer when we met with the judiciary to discuss matters of common concern. This engagement proved extremely constructive, and the committee looks forward to something like that, but there's a report still. Remember, you raised the report and said we should discuss the report. Maybe we should just add there. The committee will consider the report on the outcome of the meeting and looks forward to similar engagements. It's very, it's a bit, we're not commenting on the context, but there were issues that they raised particularly. If you said we need to look at that at some stage.
I think you are right. You know, there's an MOU signed between the Ministry and the Office of the Chief Justice. What came out of that engagement was that there appears not to be a political willingness to implement that MOU. Maybe we should call on the ministry to give us progress report on the implementation of their agreement with the Office of the Chief Justice. Can we leave the matter there?
Yes.
And then,
I don't know if it's the commissioner that people are not part of the meeting, they disagree with us because some of them should say what is the status of that exactly? Okay, page 10.
Page 9, sir.
Page 9.
I'm not sure what is paragraph 3, 5.3. The committee knows that the minister has indicated his intention to hold a colloquium towards the end of the year, among others, to discuss issues of accountability. I want us to delete that sentence.
Yes. The minister has the right to do his own colloquium
As part of the executive. But we are talking about the government, the parliamentary process. What value would that add to our work? Mr. Bassett? We want to delete that.
Chair, I have not the report in front of me, sir.
We don't have the authority to amend the government program. You are free to do what you want to do there. As long as when we want accountability, you come in account.
Yes,
okay, fine. So proceed with your own problem.
Page 10. contest of many of you have
been.
Be quiet, did you guys?
No, I think all of us brethren are just making a life. We accept the support unanimously.
But yeah, it is his position. Even on this one. We reserve our position on all of them. We discuss it with our corporate. It's always our position.
Oh, okay. The report is accepted only subject to reservation, which is not an agenda. Okay.
There's an issue.
Okay, you remember, honorable members, that we couldn't miss the April deadline on this matters referred to us by the Constitutional Court. We approached the Speaker at the request of this committee to request that would be given extension until the 5th. I have asked Advocate Sope to come and brief us on the outcome of that application. Honorable Vonga, I think we will excuse you because you have to attend the defense. I think we wanted to correct.
Chair, yeah, I just want to say that's permanently we also excuse him.
Honorable Honda, you need to hear Honorable Horn. It's raising a matter of national importance.
Yeah. No, I just want to say while you excuse him to enable another committee to correct, we say that if we, on a permanent basis, we're happy to do this thing.
One thing that I like with yourself is that when you are absent, Honorable Breidenbach brings the apology. And even if you leave before time, she does so. So we are very happy with the way you operate. But we don't have to institutionalize anything. So you are welcome to go.
Thank you, Chair.
Can you speak at the head of the table so that everybody sees?
Thank you, Honourable Chair, and the committee members. I've just put a brief note about what transpired at the Constitutional Court in line with the request of the committee to the Speaker and the subsequent resolution of the House for Parliament to approach the Constitutional Court for extension of the time period that was set by the Constitutional Court, the 31st judgment. An application was brought through the State Attorney to the Constitutional Court for the extension as set out by the committee that it should be proposed to be the 5th of August, as set as in line with the J case date for deadline. Papers were prepared and they were filed with the Constitutional Court, and on the 2nd of April, the court heard the matter. But because that was also the date on which the court was to go on recess, the court then gave an extension until the 7th of May for counsel to come and be heard on oral argument about the proposed extension. On the 7th of May, counsel then was heard and oral arguments were put before court for the extension to the 5th of August. The one thing to mention which was of significance during the court hearing was that the court made it very clear that it would, even in the instant that it granted the extension as requested by Parliament, grant that extension very sparingly or reluctantly, because it did not, as the court, want to create an impression that its orders can be varied at the whim. Our counsel, or counsel who represented Parliament, was the acting speaker who was the applicant in that matter, explained to the court that the main purpose of bringing the application was to still uphold the rule of law, as the Constitutional Court has given a specific date, the 2nd of April, on which an amendment should have been passed in line with the Court decision. And in order to achieve that, then Parliament had to approach the Constitutional Court. The Court expressed also a concern that it had taken so long for this amendment to be brought before the committee, over a period of 18 months, and that Parliament also took about a month or so to bring the application for extension. The Department, to this extent, had filed a supporting affidavit explaining the reason why it had waited so long, or explaining the period of delay between when the judgment was given and when the bill was introduced before Parliament. The Court was a bit reluctant to accept that, but warned that this would count against Parliament should it happen again. The important thing to report, one of the members of the Chairperson, is that the Court has indicated that there would be no prejudice in the event that they do not grant the extension, because the unconstitutionality of the said provisions would continue. And they have then reserved judgment in this matter. And we are then awaiting the outcome of the decision of the Constitutional Court in this regard. Thank you, Honourable Chair.
Jay, you remember it was at my suggestion that we approached the Constitutional Court, and we do understand the Court's frustrations with having to hear this matter at a very short basis. I think the Court indicated in 2 days that to hear it in April. And the question arises, why it took Parliament almost 2 months? And I think we understand these two processes do take time, but you recall me asking you a number of times what's happening with this application, because I know the Court does not like granting extensions. However, the deeper problem, and I'd like to know, and it will probably be raised in the judgment, is to why the executive took almost 18 months. I think it was 14 months to table the mending bill before Parliament, which takes us under pressure. So I fully understand the Court's frustration, and I'm sure it will be expressed very fully, but we also need to bear in mind this is the first time that Parliament has ever brought such an application. First time. There have been a number of such applications from the executive side, and I'm sure the Court gets frustrated with that. But we need to, as I indicated previously, we need to find a mechanism that Parliament is advised immediately, and our legal advisers, that's obviously the mechanism, need to be monitoring Constitutional Court orders where Parliament is ordered to amend legislation, so that we are immediately advised that it is incumbent upon us. The process is the administrative executive member that tables the bill. The order is granted against Parliament. It says Parliament must amend the legislation. So I think this is very helpful to take us forward, the frustrations expressed by the Court, and it's an issue that we can raise in our debate as well, that we need to be made aware as a committee and as Parliament when we are instructed to amend legislation. We can't wait to the last minute. So this is a matter in this particular case was a matter of great public interest. And I appreciate the fact that you allowed an extension of time for submissions, and that resulted in us having to approach the Court. But we need to start working much quicker. When the Court gives us an 18 months, we need to start working as quickly as possible and exercising oversight over the executive to file amending legislation quickly as the administrator. If that doesn't happen, there's nothing to prevent Parliament itself filing amendments. We, as a committee, can bring a committee, and we've done it in the past as well, where the Appeal Court shut down some act relating to appeals. We brought a committee bill to deal with it urgently, and the executive supports us on that. So, Chair, those are just a few comments to conclude. I appreciate the Court's frustrations with this issue, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and bearing in mind that judgment has been reserved, that the 5th of August is not terribly far away. So we need to be prepared to have it ready by then and to meet that deadline. It's neither waiting for the judgment. We need to be working on it. It needs to be making progress, and it's not a deadline as we commit.
Chair. Yes, we've taken note also of the frustrations that have been raised. Perhaps a bit on the process that was followed, and maybe we have to concede that in hindsight we could have dealt with it differently. And I'm trying to go from memory. I think the department made a decision to try and, because the two judgments were dealt with at different times, and we were waiting for the second judgment, I think it was there, to be dealt with, that we could deal with both amendments in the same book. In hindsight, there might have been the wrong decision to make. We also made sure that we did an internal consultation process and an external consultation process, which took a bit of time. And I do want to say that the process was very fruitful, because the department, as a result of that consultation, realized that lots of the comments that we received put us in a sound footing, realized that the amendments were tied up in terms of constitutionality and giving effect to the Constitutional Court judgment. What we didn't expect is the outcry against the amendments once it got to Parliament. I could have thought it would be more smooth going, bearing in mind the comments that we as the department received on the bill, and didn't expect what actually happened in the parliamentary process. Also, with hindsight, maybe it was being something that could be expected, bearing in mind the sensitivity of the issue.
Yeah, I think we should thank the Parliament and the legal unit for dealing with this matter swiftly and so well. The matter is out of your hands, but I hope that we'll find an opportunity to address this matter elsewhere. Because, you see, Parliament is another animal which has a constituency period. You also have elections in between. Now there are internal and external consultations. That may also raise the questions whether or not some of the deadlines we are given are realistic in terms of the nature of Parliament. But maybe that is a debate or another forum. But I think let's await the decision of the court. In the meantime, let's make sure that we comply, we meet the deadline of the 5th of August, and I think we are in a position to do that. Advocate, do you still want to say something?
No, thank you very much. It's safe to say that the respondent, which is Repke and the Teddy Bear Clinic, supported the extension of the time period until the 5th of August, but also expressed concern that the last proposal by the department has proposed in the last meeting of the committee would serve to delay the process that in their papers, and they have sort of said that they would not support any other extension other than the 5th of August.
There was something gone because you see, this matter was raised here, and we asked the department to look at it, so that what the department did was perfectly in order. It is for the committee to make a decision, but we cannot suppress this, especially because they need to look at other options emanated from this committee, and we can ignore the positions of the committee. But thank you for letting us know. But we can also tell them that we appreciate the initiative. We don't want people to be passive in matters affecting them. Okay, thanks.
Now, honourable members, before the House is seated, can we move on to the bill amendment?
Thank you, Chair. Two documents were distributed. The one was a while back, just to remind committee members, shortly after our last deliberations on the bill in the in committee. The committee requested the department to do, we had on a previous occasion, we had discussed briefly our proposal, or I don't want to say our proposal, a proposal that was prepared to address the concerns raised in the comments and during the public hearings. And before this committee adjourned, it asked the department to do a short narrative setting out what the proposal is about and the implications thereof. So we submitted that to the committee. I don't know if the committee wants to have us talk to it. And then we also submitted about a week or so ago a document which is really the bill is introduced into Parliament with technical changes. And on previous occasions, in previous deliberations on the bill, Mr. Dupree alerted the committee to a number of things that might have to be dealt with. And the document that was submitted last week deals with those largely technical issues. There are some substantive issues, and I think some of those substantive issues were also dealt with in our responses to the comments that were made during the public hearings. So, Chair, we could take you, we're in your hands for you to guide us which document you'd like us to talk to, and we will do so. Thank you.
I would like to propose that we start with a bill. The reason why I'm doing that is because the document that we have submitted and the summary of the proposal is the additional proposal, and the if I may refer to this document as the teddy bear response thereto, I mean that information is before the committee and it's for the committee to decide. I would like to recommend start with the bill. Thank you, Chair. Mr. Chair, on page 2 of the document, you will see a double underlining and highlighted. Those are the new phrases that we would like to insert in the long title of the bill to reflect the additional provisions of the bill correctly. I think they are straightforward, and I don't think I need to highlight or explain to you. It is merely a summary of the proposed amendments that follow in the bill.
Sorry, Chair, can I just ask, can we address the timeline when you finish the process? How you see the timeline, bearing in mind we've got to get this through the NCOP, so children just are aware from the department side how they see the timeline to adhere to the as Honourable Grayton indicated, Chair. We don't have to do that now, but just make a note of how you see this must be done here. Thank you.
Thank you, Chief. Page three, not much to report. That's just slight technical amendments that we will affect, Mr. Chair. I don't think we need to bore you with the detail. It's quite clear what is intended there. On page 4 as well. Page 5, no amendments proposed. Page 6, section or clause 7 deals with the proposed amendment of section 50 of the Act, and section 50 deals with the persons whose names must be included in the register and the related matters. And that is actually, in fact, the gist of the J case. You will recall during our responses to the to the submissions that were made to the committee that the existing proposed new paragraph C was not acceptable anymore, and that we propose now that a new paragraph be included as primarily proposed by, if I remember correctly, the Child Law Center, where the initiative should come from the state to apply in appropriate cases for a child's name to be included in the register, and then for the person who was a child during the commission of the offence be afforded opportunity to address the court on whether his or her particulars should be included in the register or not. I would just like to draw your attention Mr. Chair, to Roman paragraph 3, and we just remembered that this morning, and Mr. Bassett and I just quickly discussed it this morning, but the reference to the representations in the very first draft that we forwarded to interested parties to comment on, we received an indication that representations would not necessarily be the correct word to use, and rather to refer to the court. As you see in the paragraph C, as it was in the introduced bill under Roman 2, C2, you will find the word address. So we would like to, at this stage, propose that the committee consider replacing the word representations with address, addressing the court. And then there would also be a new paragraph D, where in the event that the court finds that substantial and compelling reasons, circumstances exist, which justify making an order that the person's particulars must be included in the register, that the court enter those circumstances in the record of proceedings. On page 8, a consequential amendment, Mr. Chair, in view of the fact that we have now both the new paragraph C and the new paragraph D. Sorry.
May I come in here? Just want to remind the committee, here we are saying, as Mr. Dupuy has said, in subparagraph Roman 2, the court has considered a report by the probation officer referred to in section 71 of the Child Justice Act, which deals with probability of that committing another sexual offence against a child. I remember during the public hearings there was uncertainty. This is a departure from the child. This particular paragraph is a departure from the child into law centre's proposal. There it was, the child law centre suggested that there must be an evaluation done by an appropriate person at state expense, I think it was. We have, as far as that paragraph is concerned, we followed the representations of one of the other NGOs, and we thought it would be appropriate rather to have the assessment or recommendation coming from the probation officer, because that is already existing in terms of the Child Justice Act. Probation officers are required where children are concerned to do a pre-sentence report. Now the question was raised, and I remember Dr. Skelton saying something along the lines, it's still an open debate, should an evaluation be done by an appropriate person or by a probation officer, and it was left open. We want to motivate what we've done here because it is already contained. There's already a mechanism in existing law to deal with it. It is also, it does have the cost implications of getting an evaluation done. And lastly, I think it's important for this committee to know that in terms of the Child Justice Act, where criminal capacity of a child is in doubt, the state must do an evaluation. And in practice, there are enormous difficulties encountered with that, not only from a cost perspective, but from people dealing with the evaluations. And in comments from the NPA as well, they indicated very strongly, and unfortunate that they perhaps not here today, but there is really going to create a capacity problem to go the evaluation route. So I just wanted to remind committee members of that and why we've done that.
Honourable members, I think this is sufficient motivation. When there are existing mechanisms, structures in government, why should we be creating new things that are going to take time to test and just better the system? Can we live with this because it's the existing is working and we can move on. So the committee supports we can proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chief. Page 8, clause 8 deals with the proposed amendment of section 51, and section 51 deals with the removal of particulars from the register. The proposed amendment or the proposed new insertions there deals with two scenarios. The first scenario is the I may refer to it as the historical information. Those are the particulars being included in the register of persons who were convicted of affected sexual offences that were committed prior to the implementation of the Act. So the proposed new paragraph 2A sub A deals with that category of persons. It's merely a technical distinction that we have to draw, because in their case the court didn't make an order for the particulars to be included in the register. Their particulars were included automatically in the register. The proposed amendment that were introduced into Parliament merely only reflected actually those cases where people's particulars were included in the register as a result of a court order. In other words, those persons who committed the offences after the implementation of the Act, and whose particulars were included in the register as a result of the court order. The introduced version said that if you want your particulars to be removed prior to the expiration of certain periods, you have to approach the court that made the order. So now we draw the distinction between a person historically included into the register to approach any court, and then the person whose particulars has been included in the register as a result of the court order will then be dealt with in paragraph B on page 9. That person must approach the court who actually made the order for his or her particulars be included in the register. So it's merely a necessary distinction that we have to draw. On page 9, there's nothing additional for the committee to note. On page 10, the proposed new clause 11, which will aim to introduce a new section 69A in the Act, deals with the implications of the Constitutional Court's judgment in as far as in the Tembeer case, in as far as it relates to children who may have been convicted as a result of contravening section 15 and 16. But I doubt whether this provision will really be made applicable in practice, because I don't think there were really convictions in that regard. But to play it safe and to be on the safe side, Mr. Chair, to rather put on the side of caution, is then to provide that the particulars of, if I call them Tenebet children, who have been included in the register, should then be removed by the registrar. And then also an instruction to the Criminal Record Center of South African Police Service to ensure that the criminal records of affected children must be clear in that regard. And then in paragraph B, we would like to propose that the reference should also be made to children who may have been convicted under the 57 Act for the similar offence, being the contravention of section 14 of the 57 Act. Maybe just on a technical side, Mr. Chair, and maybe just to draw the attention of the members to that as well. Roman paragraph 2 and 3 actually could be collapsed into one paragraph, so we would like to receive instruction from the committee in that regard. We will also just check it again, but having had a second look at our own draft, we feel that that paragraphs 2 and 3 could be collapsed into one paragraph. And then the proposed new subsection 2 then just deals with the procedure, how the particulars must be removed, and paragraph B then also requires that if a person inquires from the registrar or the Criminal Record Center, that they then be notified in writing that their particulars were excluded and the criminal records expunged. The proposed new clause 12 is then a consequential amendment. We have brought the committee's attention to this previously, to indicate to the committee that the existing long title of the Principal Act must be amended by removing the words in bold there, because it's not a true reflection of what the Principal Act will be after amendment anymore. And then also another consequential amendment is clause 13, where we just need to amend the index to the Act. And then on page 12, Mr. Chair, I would just like to draw your attention that when we prepare our amendments to the bill as introduced, we will also replace 2014 then with 2015.
We explained the amendments that we propose, and we've got nothing further to add. Thank you.
As always, thank you very much for thorough work. That's very helpful to us, because we really know what we are doing. Honourable members, Honourable Schwartz.
Thank you, Jay. Jay, can I just, there are a number of issues which I'd like to raise. Firstly, on the issue of the register, where the test that you have suggested on page 7, B, where you are suggesting a very high threshold for a court to instruct or to allow the entry of a child's name in a register, is that in line with the Constitutional Court substantial and compelling circumstances? That's a very high test. Because I see further on the next page you use a lower threshold where you say on good cause, where good cause is shown. Now I appreciate we need to satisfy the requirements of the Constitutional Court, but that is a very, very high. I think you're taking it from the minimum sentencing legislation where it's used as a very high threshold. I'd just like you to explain that to me. I'm not necessarily objecting to it, but I see on the next page you use on good cause. If you look at A, Roman 1, addressing court on the reasons and showing good cause, which is obviously a lower threshold. Then, Chair, when we've got the two considerations, we've got the draft that was prepared on our request, and now we're back to the bill as tabled, and we appreciate that we've got time constraints. So we're now dealing with the bill as proposed, but I would still like to propose an amendment in line with what the child law suggested to 37, and you're aware of that, and I'd like you to add it as an option where we emphasize for the purposes of the public that the age of 15 still remains, and that was the argument, Chair, remember? And it was under 57 where we've got the existing 1 and 2, and the 3 would be subject to section 15, a person who's under the age of 16 years may not consent to any acts of sexual penetration. Or the alternative is the age of consent to ages of sexual penetration in 16 years, made subject to section 15. And I think that just emphasizes the public concern that the age of consent remains at 16. Adults cannot engage with sex for children. So that is the point that I wanted to just add that as a suggestion. Then I want you to also just raise an issue I raised in Parliament yesterday. Considering now, firstly as a matter of process, because we've added other amendments, what is the process? Must this now go back to the House? Remembering that the bill as tabled, the amendment bill as tabled, we're now changing. That's, I presume we've got to go back to the House for a short resolution to say we are now changing the amendment bill as tabled. I think that was the process we agreed to. If that is the case, then we can add further amendments, and there are other technical amendments that I'd like to alert you to that don't go to the heart of this matter, but there are in the bill itself one or two issues. But the main issue to me relates to the issue of consent, which is in the definition of Chapter 1. If you look at the definitions, what is consent? I would like us to add a clause there as to what is informed consent, if we're dealing with children the ages of 12 to 16. And I would like us to look at something along the lines of what is included in the Children's Act, where a child can consent to a medical operation if they understand the implications of that. Otherwise, it's not consent. Now, let me just refer you here what already it says, consent cannot be given where B, that would be the child, is incapable in law of appreciating the nature of a sexual act. And then it said if they are asleep, unconscious, in an altered state of a consciousness, a child below the age of 12. But why can't we also say of not of sufficient maturity or mental capacity to understand the risks of this? Similar to the wording in section 129, which relates to a child above the age of 12 engaging in a surgical procedure. So Chair, I'll give wording to that and I'll ask them to put in as an option and we can then decide on that. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, I think we are looking at
it's an option and I will look at that option and you can ask it in phrasing because it's your option. Can we deal with the other issues that are raised? Mr. Bassett, Mr. Honorable Breitenbach, I'll come back to you.
Just with regards to Mr. Swart's question with regards to substantial compelling circumstances on the one hand and good cause on the other, I think possibly it should remain as it is, and I would suggest it should remain so simply because the substantial and compelling circumstances suggested here relate to new cases where people will have the opportunity to address the court and proper procedure will be followed. And on good cause relates to people who didn't have that opportunity and whose names were entered into the register of course. So they were not granted that opportunity. So perhaps the level should be a little less for them seeing that they didn't have that opportunity initially.
Just on the cuff, looking at it, I tend to agree with what Advocate Breitenbach is saying. We've got to come back to this committee with the other new proposals, and we'll deal with that if this committee is happy with that in further detail and having a good look at it as well. We will prepare the options that have been requested. I don't know whether there's anything more to say about that, Mr. Breer. If you want to add anything.
Could I just ask you through your chair, would you consider the implications of the options so that we can make a wise decision on that, particularly whether they're, you know, just on the, this is a new issue on the consent issue, if there are any adverse implications which will go against what the Constitutional Court has designed. Thank you, Chair.
Mr. Chair, I would just like to respond very, very briefly. The first very important thing to note is that the Constitutional Court accepts bright line rules, in other words 12 to 16, and also all who commented on the bill during the whole process accept bright line rules. If we depart from bright line rules, you're going to bring a whole new dimension to a criminal case. And then I would just like to mention to Mr. Swart that when he talked about the proposal by conglomerate Childline, just please check the most recent submission that they've made, the 4th of May, because the second option that you mentioned there, they're not going with that one anymore. They are now recommending the first one, actually, and that is on page.
I'll go with the second option, Chair. Let's make it the first option as an option. Would you insert that as an option in, Chair? Thank you.
Any other matter? I think we have closed now.
Thank you, Chair. Just on the question of timelines, I think Mr. Swart raised that as well. How long is it going to take? Maybe Mr. Romano can help us what the timeline is that the NCFP needs to deal with the matter after it's been finalised by the National Assembly. And we've also got to bear in mind that there is the June-July recess. And I think if I remember correctly, the recess starts at the end of June and I'm not too sure when it goes on until.
Honourable Sir, I think the onus is on us to comply. So So we can't leave it in the hands of the department. And what do we do if they take another 8 months? I think we must set our own timeline. And we'll be reasonable. And we will communicate with you. So we're not going to act like little dictators.
What we've done in the past and which might be advisable is for you to have a meeting with the NCLPCA dealing with this legislation once we have finalized it, so that they are aware and it is prioritized. Because you're quite correct, that is in our hands. And it's going to be quite a push, bearing in mind the recess. And we might need to finalize this very quickly within the next week, so that it can be set on the National Assembly when we have full plenary meeting, if we can debate it, and that would be within the next 2 weeks possibly.
No, I was saying that in terms of our program, we are deliberating on this Tuesday and Wednesday, and hopefully we can finalize on Tuesday or Wednesday. Maybe then the department has to come back and then try the options for the committee. Hopefully by maybe Monday or Tuesday morning, we can have those on the meeting.
Thank you, honorable members. I think we have done a very good job. So the meeting is closed, honorable Gredenbach. Before you fall asleep, I think I want to release you.
Thank you,
sir. Thank you, bye. Thank you.